You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time. Just like Gonzales. We're keeping our guns.
Bird stands in the corner with the barrels are straight. I looked out the window and over the gate. The big fat rabbits are jumping in the grass. Wait till they hear my old shotgun blast. Shotgun boogie.
Hi, I'm Coke Reynolds, inviting you to join me for the Shooting Bench PM, the evening edition. Shooting Bench PM is your source for all things guns. Guns, hunting, reloading, firearms training, competition, and a host of other firearms-related topics.
Look out, bushy tail, tonight you'll be in the pot. Gun boogie, draw the beat so fine. Look out, big boy, he's loaded all the time.
The Shooting Bench PM does not include news or politics unless it is directly related to your gun rights. Thursday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Mountain Time.
I'll be back, little gal, when your pappy runs out of shells.
No brag, just fact.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh, here he comes again. Here's Cope with the Shooting Bench.
I still remember these words. Oh, it's plain that you're looking for trouble. Trouble's what I try to shun. If that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. 'Cause cowboy, we're both packing guns.
You know what's good for you. Stay tuned for 100% Gun Talk, coming up right now.
44 spoke, and he sent lead and smoke, 17 inches of flame. Oh, the big one had never cleared leather, beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt, the bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener advised.
Dang, I keep forgetting about that part of that intro right there. I got to get in there and get that fixed. Keep forgetting about it till Thursday nights. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's April the 9th, and it's a Thursday. And primarily, we reserve Thursdays for a little bit of gun talk. Of course, there's always, the way things are getting, there's always something else we probably need to slip in there from time to time. But we're going to go down the list here and talk about some different terminology used in the firearms industry. And like every other time, other things will pop up and we'll discuss them as they come along. So the one thing I want to talk about before we get started here, and this is very interesting to me, and I got this from a, and I got all the links and everything to verify it. It is true that police databases and computers are being hacked all over the country. This is quite the epidemic here, it seems like. In let's see, here's one police department computers hacked on 7 April. Fox News reporting a Massachusetts police department hacked on 8 April and paid $750 ransom for it. Chicago Police Department's computers hacked on 21 February. Chicago Chief Police Harold Kaufman confirmed the department had been hacked and they paid $500 ransom. On 13 March, St. Louis Police Department was hacked. Wisconsin 2 days ago. New York Police Department said police and FBI computers were hacked. L.A. Police Department, April 9th, confirmed hacked. I've got links to all of these. And the newest one is that day before yesterday, appears that White House computers were hacked.
You said April 9th, that's
today. Yeah, but this one, this is a different one. It's day before yesterday. So, there you go. Everybody's pretty busy. I don't know what all that means, but we'll probably see some more of that here before too awful long. And notice we had a couple of newbies in here tonight, and good to see you. That was, let's see. Hey, 99's in here, or was anyway. Clock's still ticking there. He might still be around. This Patriot 35 Vino, that's a new one. Glad you could make it in here. Got some anonymous there. And let's see. John Fish Macon. Starting to Eddie Crump. All you guys starting to be regular fixtures. But I don't remember what happened, or I haven't heard of what happened to... who was the guy? And I posted it up there earlier. It was 45... gun nut head or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but he was one of those from up there in Washington, unless he changed his name and I didn't know about it. We haven't seen him here for a while. So anyway, let's hold on just a second here. I got to get my heater going here. You know, it got down to 23 last night, got up and there was ice on the water, the goats and the dogs and everything. And they tell us around here that thou shalt not plant your garden until the 1st of June. And the way the weather is right now up until today, that seems a little ridiculous. But I guess many a crop has been lost around here planting too early. So it's Easter Sunday 3 years ago. 2 years, yeah, 3 years ago, Easter Sunday, they canceled church. There we go. Okay, long slide. I got it. I wondered if that wasn't the case, but I wasn't sure. 3 years ago, they canceled church on Easter Sunday because we had 2 feet of snow. So Easter was just a few days ago, so we're not too far away from that right now. All right, let's look at a few of the things here. And I know that most everybody has, understands a lot of these definitions. So we're going to go through a few of them here. We'll bounce back and forth, in and out, and doing some other stuff here. But for those of you that may be new gun owners or want to be gun owners, or may already be a long-time gun owner and just haven't looked up some of these terms, probably the top one on the list, and we'll go for the most part, we'll do these in alphabetical order. We'll skip around a little bit, but ACP, that is automatic Colt pistol. You talk about the ACP behind 45 is the most common one, but there's a 25 ACP, a 32 ACP, 380, and a lot of people don't know there was actually a 38 ACP. Many moons ago. Let's see. There's some of these that are just too easy. So, that term assault rifle gets thrown around quite a bit. And for those that are in the know, for those that listen to the Shooting Bench, we know that assault rifles are, by definition, or at least by U.S. Army definition, select fire weapons chambered for something of intermediate power, 223, 308, you know, whatever. And it can, people use that term for semi-automatic rifles that have been dolled up and made to look pretty like some of the actual assault rifles, but that term is incorrect. Now, assault weapon kind of goes along with that same definition there. The actual definition is any weapon that can be used in an assault, but with the Brady Act and the assault weapons ban and all that kind of stuff, then that definition got changed around a little bit. So, let's, we can skip, I'm going to skip several of these. Ball ammo. Originally, this was just as the name implies there, it was for spherical, you know, round ball projectiles out of muzzle loaders. Now it's generally considered a full metal jacketed bullet that has either a round or pointed nose. This is what's used in military terminology, although there's quite a few people use that out on the street, but it originated in the military. There's such a thing as what's called a battery cup primer. I think the better term for it would be a boxer primer, where the anvil and the cup is supported in, I guess it's not necessarily a boxer. This would be the, anvil and the cup is supported in outside shell like shotgun primer, but, that could be any of the boxer primers. Now, your Berdan primers are not that way because the anvil is in the casing. It's in the shell, in the head of the cartridge case. And so it's not supported outside. Hang on just a minute. Sorry about that. All right, let me scroll down through here. I'm going to spare you the misery here of some of these because they're just too easy. How about bore sighting? Let's talk about bore sighting a little bit. The term bore sighting comes from, let's say you mount a scope or you just got your iron sights put back on or something. More commonly it's done with scopes, but you can do it with iron sights. It's no big deal. And what you want to do is secure that. It's kind of tough to do with a handgun, but you can do it, but get it close enough. With the rifle, you want to secure that somehow where they stand by just a second. Long slide. A lot of the Berdan primers that are in the older cases, of course, are still corrosive, but the modern stuff, most of it is non-corrosive now. There is still a little bit that's corrosive. The steel manufactured, I believe, primarily Yugoslavian stuff, as far as I know. But for the most part, it's all non-corrosive now. So, but bore sighting, you want to secure that barrel if it's still... You need to be able to see through the barrel. Okay, so you either need to take the bolt out, break it open like a shotgun, a hinged break open, or remove the barrel in some way where you can still see in the scope. Now they make a little periscope type deal. I've got one. I got to find it, but I've got one. I picked it up in, guy gave it to me at the, oh, what was it? The, You know, I got a sticker right over there on the gun safe from that place. I'll have to walk over and look at it. It was in California. It was in Barstow, California. And it was the, what in the world was that? I don't remember, the shooting iron or something like that. I don't remember. But anyway, he gave me this little contraption. And it's a little copper or brass thing that's shaped like an L. And it works just like a periscope. It's got a mirror set at a 45-degree angle in the corner of this thing. And you set that in the barrel and gently close the bolt on it and hold it in there. And then you look through that periscope to see down the barrel. So what you want to do when you line get that barrel secured, you want to look through the barrel and get it lined up on something that is, you know, across the room, across the yard, across the street, whatever the case may be. The farther away it is, obviously, the more accurate it'll be. And you get it centered up perfectly in that barrel as you're looking down the bore. And then you want to, without moving the barrel, it should be secured pretty well. You want to raise your head up and look through the scope or down the sights, one or the other, and see how that is in relation to what you saw through the bore. And with that barrel secured, you want to adjust your scope so that it is, now remember, your adjustments will be exactly opposite of what you think they should be, because where you're looking through the barrel. Okay, if you look through there and it shows to be high, you don't adjust it down. You adjust it up. You want to do the opposite of what you think it should be. So anyway, you do that however many times it takes, and it should only, if your barrel's secured properly, it should only take once or twice. So you look through there and get your crosshairs and the center of your barrel lined up the same. Does that make sense to you? Probably not. But anyway, once you do that, your barrel will be, your scope will be close enough to get it on paper so that you can get out there at 25 yards or so and not waste any ammo looking for it. Now, I did this one time off my back porch in Lithonia, Georgia, and I sighted it in. I bore sighted it on a milk jug that was sitting on the shore of this little lake about 180 to 200 yards away. And I got that, because I went and bought that scope and that barrel that day. I sighted it in, or bore sighted it, I should say. And then I went the very next day to the Georgia State Championships in Milledgeville, Georgia. And as luck would have it, and I'm sure there had to have been some luck involved there, I actually did win my class. I won two classes with that 22 Magnum barrel on that Thompson Center Contender, having never fired a shot through it before the match started. The first shot I fired through it was a qualifying shot for that match. And so bore sighting can be accurate if you take the time and do it correctly. It's if you get in a hurry, you know, you can be a foot off or more at 25 yards. More than that, you can be 2 or 3 feet off if you don't take your time and do it correctly. But if you do it right, you can make it pretty accurate. So there's my little bore sighting story there. So let's something that just happened. It looks like tomorrow. Looks like the there's going to be some people that were injured at Fort Hood in 2009 are going to be receiving their Purple Hearts. And I didn't think this day would ever come. I thought that with this low life president we have and everything, that this would have been this never would have happened. But I'm glad to hear that these guys are going to receive their Purple Hearts, as they should have some time ago. So One of them here is named Patrick Ziegler. He was, I guess, one of the most seriously wounded at Fort Hood. There was 13 killed, you remember, and 30 of them injured. And it looks like they're going to be handing out baskets full of Purple Hearts here before too long. So I'm glad to hear that. I don't know how many people are getting them exactly, but I would hope that everybody that was wounded or injured during this attack would receive that. And let's see, there was, let me go check my chat room here and see what all is going on. I haven't been keeping up with it. Let's see. There, you know, Mountain Shooter, we've got a gun show coming up here Saturday also. And I remembered Lancaster when I was in Fort Irwin, California. Lancaster was still the home of Jack First and the gun parts outfit there. Jack First is a awesome place to find gun parts, especially if you're looking for obsolete, no longer made stuff called gun part, not gun parts, Jack First. Gun Parts has a lot of good stuff too, but Jack First is the place to go for the really, really hard to find stuff. So let's scroll on down here real quick and see if there's anything that, yeah, they'll be saying, we do side them in once in a while. We've found that it does cut down on the expenditure of ammo if we go ahead and sight the gun in before we take it hunting. And it cuts way down on the noise and the wounded animals while I bore sight those. So yeah, it's a pretty good idea, I think. But the Peanut Rider, I wish I had that 6.60 you're talking about. Those are nice little rifles there. That Remington 6.60 and 308, great little gun. I sold one of those in a, I think it was a 600, but it was in a 358 Norma Magnum just before I shut down the shop out there. Nice little gun. I really liked it. Let's see. What have we got going on here? Something with the... Let's see, I just got a Glock 42 and 380. What are the chances the 9x18 will work in it? Okay, let me stop you right there, John. It's not the diameter of the bullet that's going to hurt anything, because 380 and 9mm are both 355. What's going to hurt is the fact that your 9x18 is a silly millimeter longer than the 380, which is a 9x17. So if you were to somehow be able to get that thing to fire, it may not be a good thing, because the bolt's not going to be shut all the way. That's the example that I use when every time we're talking about and Doc's got a good point there for in-spec chambers. Obviously, if your chamber's a little worn or out of spec a little bit for some reason or another, you may actually get one to chamber. You can actually get some 357 Magnums chambered in some of the old 38 special revolvers. Firing them is not a good thing. The correct technical term for that is bad. The 9x18 probably wouldn't be quite as bad. A 380, if it fires in the Makarov, it's a thousandth of an inch, millimeter difference. If it fires in the Makarov, it would be because you've got an extra long firing pin, or it head spaces on the extractor, one or the other, because it shouldn't fire in there. But it would if it's got an extra long firing pin, I guess. But what I use for an example is the 9mm in a lot of my classes, particularly the CCW classes, where I have a short period of time to spend with a lot of people that are not getting the best for their training dollar and going on and getting more classes, you know. So I try to squeeze as much in there as I possibly can. But I use the 9mm because I talk about this when I'm not for buying ammo and for chambering them in your weapon. The 9mm, you know, I write this down on the board. I say, which one of these will fit in your gun? I've got right down there 9mm Luger, 9mm NATO, 9mm Parabellum, 9x19mm, 9mm NATO. I write all those down. I said, which one of these will fit in your gun? And they ponder on it for a little while. And, you know, they'll usually say one of the 9mm there. And I said, no, all of them will. They're all the same thing. And then I write down a whole long list of other ones there. The 9x18, 9x19, or nine, yeah, 9x17, 9x18, 9x21, 9x23, the 9mm Largo, the 9mm Corto, the 9mm Kurtz, the 9mm Tokarev, the 9mm Makarov. That's all I can think of right off the top of my head, but I write all those down there, and I said, now which one of those will fit in your 9mm? Well, it can be fired safely in your 9mm. And the correct answer is none of them. There's all quite a bit of difference. The 9x18 and the Makarov are the same thing. The 9mm Largo, pretty much extinct now. There's still some around there. It's not terribly hard to find, but you can't just run down to Walmart and get it. The 9mm 9x21 and 9x23 are both primarily competition rounds. Anyway, you just got to be careful when you start buying ammunition and loading it up in your weapon if you're not sure what it is. Just because it says 9mm, it's like a 7mm rifle. You've got 7mm Mauser, and so, you know, we've gone through all the dozen or so different 7mm that there are out there. Make sure that you know what you're buying, not only because you can't take the ammunition back and return it in most places, but it could be terribly dangerous and at the very least, you know, mess up your gun. So that's... this chat room, I keep going back over here. I've got to down here and check out all the posts here in the chat room. Yakima Glock, you know, I was pretty surprised too that whole Lama 1911 worked very well. As a matter of fact, it worked flawlessly underwater. Now, it didn't do so well in the sand and all that, but it did very well underwater there. Let's see. All right, well, I'll catch up on all this here. The Yakima, the Largo, is not 9x20. That's 9. It's very close to the same as a 9x23. But... I'll check on that during the break, but there's no such thing as a 9x20 that I know of. All right, well, let's take a little break here, and we'll come back here in a few minutes. Make sure I got the right one here. Yeah, this one will work.
Exhausted after she had me. Two nurses to hold me and one nurse to slap me. Doctor turned to mama and he shook his head, wiped the sweat off his brow. And then he said, this boy's way off the charts as far as I can tell. Ooh, mama, he's a double XL.
Back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Survival Circle. All right, we're back. Let's finish this up. Someone up there had mentioned something about just before we went to the break about the same holds true for the 300 Magnum, talking about the different different calibers and everything. And there's a lot of cartridges that, I mean, the 270, you know, people get confused, put 22s in 22 Magnums. Yes, they'll usually fire. Yes, they will always split the case. You know, you can put 30-30s in a 7.62 by 54R. Yes, they will fire. Yes, they will split the case, and you'll get powder and stuff back in your face every time. But as far as similar calibers, there's 270s, the 257. I mean, there's almost every caliber out there has things that start out with the same numbers. You know, 7mm, a lot of the 300s and 30 calibers. You know, I've had people argue with me till they were blue in the face about 7.62 by 51, which is a 308, and 7.62 by 39, which is not. But they see the 7.62 by something, and since they don't have any idea what they're talking about, they will argue till the cows come home that that you can exchange those two caliber, and they're not even close. I mean, you can tell they're different from, you know, 50 feet away just from standing on a table. So be careful about doing that. You know, some of that stuff you can get away with. We've talked about a few of those things on the show here several times. About fire forming cartridges. You can shoot 270s safely in a 30-06 all day long. And it's going to blow the case out to 30 caliber, and when you get done firing it, it'll be a 30-06 shell. And there'll be no accuracy involved, but it won't hurt anything. You can shoot 257 Roberts through a 7mm Mauser. You can shoot 25-06 through a 30-06. 284 Remingtons through a 30-06. There's a whole bunch of them that you can do. You're not going to hit anything, but and I've told you this story before, and I'm going to tell you again real quickly. Yes, you can fire a 308 in a 270. I have seen it happen three times, and the technical definition for that is very bad. And the one time a guy was injured, the gun blew up. The other two times, had a little damage on the gun. One time, you know, gun wasn't hurt at all. And now how that happens is the base of the shell is the same on all of them. You know, I mean, the 270, 30-06, 308, 257 Roberts, a little bit different than the 257 Roberts, not much. Long slide, but you gotta remember those are the same basic calibers too. All you're doing is blowing out the shoulder in the same bore. Now if you take 223s and fire form them in a 7mm TCU, then you'd have the, you know, bullet bouncing down the bore. No accuracy involved, but it's perfectly safe. Let's see, what was I saying? Oh, the way that 308 fires in a 270 is when you go to close the bolt, the bullet will push down in the case, and that will actually serve as your head spacing. The shoulder won't be touching. The shoulder won't be touching the shoulder of the chamber. It'll be, you know, like a third of an inch away or something like that, maybe more than that. So when you fire it, thank goodness you lose a little bit of the pressure by blowing that case out to fill the chamber, and that bullet will be pushed down the bore. You know how that happens is that the bullet will squish down enough that, now if it's a soft point, that's a very good thing, because that means you've got an open hole in the front there for that lead to squish out of. If it's a full metal jacket, especially a commercial full metal jacket, military might be a little bit more forgiving, because your military full metal jackets are open base, exposing the lead. So the fire the heat will, you know, it'll soften the lead a little bit. It has some place to go when the bullet squishes down in the chamber. A commercial full metal jacket is solid on the base. It's all one piece. There's no escape route. And that is going to cause a problem. A severe problem. So, Peanut Rider, no, I have never tried the 303 British in the 7.62x54R. I suspect, yeah, it might probably be a little on the high pressure side if it were to fire. I don't know for sure. I've never tried it, and I'm not real sure that I'm interested in trying it, to tell you the truth. But anyway, there's lots of different combinations out there that'll work. Now, people learn how to do things. You know, everybody tells me how retarded I am for doing some of the things that I do. If I thought it was dangerous, I wouldn't do it. I've been around guns for a while. And some of the things that I do, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that other people do. If there is any risk, I'm willing to take it for the benefit of science here. You know, once in a while I'll do stuff that I don't recommend that everybody do. But I feel that the risk is either so slight or non-existent, I'm not intentionally going to do something if I feel like I'm going to blow my head off. But you know, I've done several things here that I wouldn't recommend everybody do. But I haven't yet to be injured doing it. Or blew up. I did blow up one gun. I blew up an AR-15 underwater one time. It didn't like it very well at all. But my AK and SKS and everything else, they all worked underwater fine. Let's see. I've got one of those. I just saw it here yesterday. It's laying right over here on my bench right now. One of the 308s that was fired in a 270. This happened after we got to Arizona. That happened right here when I was in Pine Top. So the other two happened when I was in New Mexico. And I've still got all of those cases somewhere. I think I know where they're at, but one of them for sure I know where it is. So, let's see. Mountain Shooter's got a mystery for us here. Shooting a 300 mag with 175 grain Sierra Match Kings. I was shooting 190 grain Sierra Match Kings. The 175 shoulder on each case collapses. The 190s did not. Same charge. 71 grains within the loading book. Let's see. We're shooting the 190s. The 175 shoulders on each case collapses. Well, you know, I don't know why that is, Mountain Shooter. If you're shooting... If they were both Sierra bullets, Sierra, I think, makes probably some of the very finest, if not the finest, bullets out there. They're exceedingly consistent and uniform, and I can't imagine why the 175 shoulders would collapse and the 190s didn't. Were you loading them in different batch of shells? Maybe your case neck was thicker on some of them. I don't know. Did the shoulders collapse? Okay, let me see if I understand you. You said the shoulder of each case collapsed. Was that during firing, or during seating, or during resizing? There's a reason for all of those. I just don't know which one it happened to you. It's funny that usually a case doesn't collapse on firing, since they're being all the pressures inside of them and not outside. But let me know which was happening there. Help me understand that a little better. I don't know if I quite get what you're saying. And C7, yeah, you can shoot a 40 caliber through a 10 millimeter Glock. and that is only because the case head space is on the extractor. We've talked about that a number of times. 45 gap will also shoot into 45 ACP in the Glock perfectly safely and quite accurately. 380s will shoot in a 9mm Glock, head spacing on the extractor, quite accurately. You just have to rack the slide by hand every time. So lots of ways you can go. Just need to be careful and pay attention to what you're doing there. And don't try to stick a 9x18 in your 380. It's not only too long, it's a little bit too big round on top of that. So it could cause a serious problem for you. All right, let's go back and look at some of our... it's during firing. Okay, mountain shooter, you're going to have to explain to me how a case collapses during firing. I don't understand that. With the pressure on the inside blowing everything out, how can a shoulder collapse on firing? I don't understand that a little bit. I wish you had maybe a picture you could send me or something to help me understand that, or a little more explanation. That doesn't make any sense. So, well, let's go back and hit a couple more of our firearms-related terminology here. Let me go down through here and pick out. You know, your brass on your cartridge cases is brass. The brass is brass for a reason, so that it is it can expand a little bit and then relax. The steel cases have to be pretty mild steel, but they'll do the same thing. Aluminum, you wouldn't want to use a high grade like a spring steel or something like that, because you wouldn't get the expansion of the case that you need to help with help retard the rearward movement of the case when you fire. So let's see, some of these are just way too, you know, the caliber itself is a pretty interesting thing. The caliber is, you know, we can get into a thousand different discussions about caliber or calibers. You know, a caliber is the nominal diameter of the bullet of a rifled firearm, or the diameter between the lands in a barrel. So your bullet diameter and your widest point in the barrel should be approximately the same. In this country, generally, we talk about it in hundredths of an inch or thousandths. In European countries, most everything, or no, your European Great Britain is usually in thousandths of an inch, but in Europe and other places, it's in millimeters. So most everywhere but here is generally in millimeters. So if you look at caliber designations, man, I ought to prepare a show for that sometime and go over all the different ones and why they're called what they are. Because some of them are so weird. You know, somebody say, why do they say you can shoot a 38 in a 357 because the 38's bigger? No. The bullets are the same diameter. How the 38 got its name is because there was, and I think we talked about this a few months ago, the 38 Special originally was what they call a heel bullet, where the bullet diameter is the same size as the outside of the case that it's in. And how does that happen? Well, the part that's inside the case is a little bit smaller. And you can see this real easy if you just take a pair of pliers and pull a bullet out of a 22 shell, not a 22 Magnum, 22 long rifle, 22 short, 22 long. That is a heel bullet. As far as I know, the 22 family is the only thing currently manufactured with heel bullets in them. So that's how the 38 happened. And how it got to be special, I'm not sure, but that's how the caliber happened. So you can go up the line with, you know, it's funny that the 22 long rifle and the 22 Magnum are both considered 22 caliber, but they're not the same. The 22 is 223 thousandths of an inch, and the 22 Magnum is 224, same as the 223 and 22-250 and all that. And then there's a, well, which one is it? The 22 Jet, or no, maybe the 22 K Hornet. I don't remember which one of them is a 222 thousandths of an inch. A little smaller than all the rest of them. So, you know, the, let's see, the 44 caliber, another one that used to be a heel bullet, because that, the 44 Magnum, 44 Special, are 429 thousandths of an inch. Why do they call them a 44? At 440 thousandths of an inch. Because they were heel bullets. Let's see, 357 SIG. Now there's a misnomer for you. That's all marketing scam right there. The 357 SIG is nothing but a 9mm. The bullets are the same bullets that you shoot in any other 9mm. Thank you, Long Slide. He says it's the 22 Jet. The 357 SIG, because it's a little faster, and it's really not any faster than a 9mm plus P plus, although your gun can be beat up a little bit if you shoot at a steady diet of plus P plus ammunition. But there's nothing 357 about the 357 SIG. The 38, there was a lot of the 38s. There was a 38 Smith & Wesson, there was a 38 Smith & Wesson long, a 38 Smith & Wesson short, and all of those were different shells. Not to be confused with the 38 Special. Although you can shoot 38 Smith & Wessons in a 38 Special, you cannot shoot 38 Specials in a 38 Smith & Wesson. There's a ton of stuff we can get into that. I don't know if that's interesting to anybody or not, but we can. You know what we might do? I'm thinking that what we might do here, we did this a long time ago, back when it was in the AM days, and we might have even done it a little bit during the Watchman days, and that was to pick a cartridge of the week and discuss it on the Thursday night discussions. And we might do that again. It's been at least 3, probably 4 years since we've done that. We might start that up again just for the heck of it, because there's a lot of interesting things that go on with all of these different calibers. You see what it says on the barrel, you see what it says on the box of shells that you buy, you see what it is on the box that the gun's in, and you just go down to Walmart and you buy a box of shells and you just shoot it and don't really think anything about it. But some of the stories on some of these are pretty cotton-picking interesting. And we may just take off and hey, LB Sand looks like he's going to be in Washington. Outstanding. Maybe we can meet up there. That would be cool. Yeah, we're going to got a couple other. Now, by the way, you guys, Clint Beyer is going to be there at the Arms Expo with his barrels. I've told you before, I'll tell you again, if you want something that shoots that you're not likely to be able to outshoot, get these Beyer barrels. They cost a little more than the Butler Creeks and stuff like that, but they are truly what I would consider match-grade barrels. They're excellent, excellent barrels. So, so we might do that. If everybody wants to do that, we might take a little time out of each show and go over some of these cartridges and calibers and stuff and their origin and history and whatnot, because I think it's interesting as heck for some of these, but I'm a little weird, so everybody else may not think it's so great. Okay. The looks like Susie B's hanging out with us still. That's good. I don't know, where's all the rest of these Washington girls at anyway? I didn't see B2 Basic in there. I didn't see Kit. Tampico Scout didn't make it. I wonder what happened to everybody. Must be having a party or something up there in Washington tonight. Well, C7's got one of those buyer barrels. I remember that now. Yeah, it's a great shooting experience with that buyer barrel. All right, well, I've had all the fun I can stand for tonight. A few minutes early, but I'm going to get on out of here. I've got to get some stuff ready. Don't forget to join us tomorrow at 4 o'clock Pacific time, 7 Eastern, for the Patrick Henry Society. Kit Lang is going to be making her debut tomorrow, and I will produce the show for her here for the first time or two. She'll be on every Friday at 4 o'clock Pacific, and you know what Kit's all about. I don't have to explain that to you. And once she gets her sea legs under and everything, then we'll turn her loose by herself. So she'll probably be the last one that will be a live host unproduced by somebody else. Okay, that's it. I'm out of here. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Actually, I'll see you at 4 o'clock tomorrow with the Patrick Henry Society. We'll have 6 consecutive hours of live programming every Friday starting tomorrow. We'll have Kit, Concretin, Mother Earth, Amy, and myself. Me with a 2-hour show on Friday, so that's going to give us 6 hours of continuous programming. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The car of a man, a knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire keeps the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
Chest knight of silver is his badge of trust. There are campfire legends that the flames men spin of the man. Who